You know, it's not elegantly stated, let me put it that way. I'm speaking off the cuff in response to a question, and I'm sure I could state it more clearly and in a more effective way than I did in a setting like that.
Welcome to the We're for the 100% edition of It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, it's just a pleasure to be with you here this week, both of us here in Washington.
Wait, if we're both here, the 100% are here.
That's right. We're 100% here. And Ken, this has been, well, it's been kind of a difficult month thus far for Mitt Romney.
Well, I don't know if we're counting him out yet, but a lot of polls seem to be, if not counting him out, slowly showing that he's slipping in his race. And, you know, we never saw any momentum coming out of the Republican convention. We saw him with the premature remark about Libya, the violence in Libya. And now, of course, this leaked video from a May fundraiser.
Yes, May 17th at the home of an equity capital billionaire in Boca Raton. We're speaking to a group of similarly wealthy people, $50,000 a plate. He said a lot of things which have gotten a lot of attention, for example.
There are 47% of the people who will vote for the president no matter what. All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they're entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. But that's an entitlement, and the government should give it to them.
Okay. In the scramble since this first emerged earlier this week, we have heard a great deal of pushback from various people saying, now, wait a minute, people aren't necessarily put off by this characterization of half the people in the country as moochers off the government. And it is true also that something like half, almost half the people in the country are not paying federal income taxes. They pay payroll taxes, or maybe they're very low income, or they're elderly or in the military. But this is what most people believe. Something like 80% of the people in the country tell pollsters they think they pay federal income tax, whether they do or not, and that others are getting away scot-free.
There's truth to that, but there's also a bigger political dilemma for Mitt Romney here. And it just seems like listening to the tape, watching the tape, it seems like he has ruled out trying to win over that 47%. We always talk about Barack Obama's comment about clinging to guns and religion in April of 2008.
Which hurt him.
Which hurt him, yes.
I mean, and if it had come even earlier, it would have hurt him even worse.
Perhaps.
In the fight against Hillary Clinton.
Of course, April is much different than late September. But even still, I don't think Obama seemed to rule out trying to win over those voters. And the fact is, if you listen to more of the video, you hear Mitt Romney talking about those people. And it just seems to be, again, fulfilling the caricature, the stereotype that the Democrats are trying to draw of Mitt Romney, that he's being out of touch and elitist.
And here again, as with the foreign policy issue, where after having made the initial thrust, he did not want to back down from that, did not want to apologize. When this 47% thing came up this week, he went out and gave a press conference in which he said this about the message he seemed to be conveying.
But it's a message which I'm going to carry and continue to carry, which is, look, the president's approach is attractive to people who aren't not paying taxes because, frankly, my discussion about lowering taxes isn't as attractive to them, and therefore I'm not likely to draw them into my campaign as effectively as those who are in the middle. This is really a discussion about the political process of winning the election.
And, yeah, that's why we started talking about the 100%, where he started saying, I'm for the 100%, and forget about all these other percentages that I myself was voluntarily throwing out at a fundraiser for $50,000 a plate.
You know, again, we have another example of Mitt Romney, as he said in the beginning of this podcast, not elegantly stating what he tried to convey. And it's the kind of stuff that Mitt Romney said over and over this year that, you know, on further reflection, I wouldn't have said it this way. But again, with 47 or so days left until the election, it sets him back because, again, instead of talking about jobs, instead of talking about how he will make things better from the previous 4 years, he has to backtrack and explain what he meant.
Okay, and now there were other things in that hour-long video, roughly, that were spiky, that were kind of controversial. He said he'd be better off if he were born of Mexican parents and he were Latino. That would make him a more attractive candidate.
Well, he was 50% right on that one.
And
because
also,
his father was born in Mexico.
That's right, but not of Mexican heritage.
No.
And of course, he was kind of referring to his difficulties with the Hispanic vote, and it was not a Hispanic audience he was speaking to. He also said something that was much more relevant to the audience he was speaking to, many of whom were very interested in the Israel issue. He said The Palestinians have no interest in peace, and we might as well just kick the ball on down the field because there's really no chance. It's impossible to get any kind of a peace agreement in the Middle East.
Look, Mitt Romney can say over and over again, as he has, that he'll be a better friend to Israel than Barack Obama. That may be true, that may not be true. But for somebody who's going to be the president of the United States to basically dismiss the prospects of peace before he's even president, and the fact is he's no longer a fair and honest arbiter of this peace process, it just shows a lot about what he's intending to do as president, or not do.
Now, this comes at a time when the Romney campaign, that is to say the people who are trying to get him elected professionally, were already under a lot of fire because they didn't seem to have gotten much of a bounce out of the convention, as you said, and because the polls haven't been as good as they were expecting at this point. And so there's been a lot of criticism. Are they buying ads in the right places? Are they putting up ads where they should be in as much abundance as they should be? And are they handling the money right? All those usual kind of questions. You know, they were even getting back on him for how he put his speech together at the convention and whether or not that was done at the last minute. So they were already under a lot of pressure before this thing blew up. And now we see a certain number of Republicans being highly critical or even pushing themselves away and beginning to get some distance from the candidate.
Right. Some of them are Republicans running for the Senate in very, very tight races. For example, in Massachusetts, Romney is like 30 to 35 points trailing the president, even though Massachusetts is ostensibly Mitt Romney's home state. But Scott Brown is in a neck-and-neck race for his Senate seat against Democrat Elizabeth Warren. Some polls last week showed Elizabeth Warren pulling ahead, although there was a Boston Herald poll released Thursday morning that had Scott Brown up by 4 or 5 points. So it's obviously very, very close. And people like Scott Brown, Dean Heller of Nevada, I mean, these are Republicans who are really scared to death of being linked.
And then we also have Linda McMahon in Connecticut, another surprisingly close race, a Democratic state, and yet the Republican Linda McMahon has been leading in all the polls there. I guess it's tightening up a little bit, but at any rate, she wanted to make clear to people that she did not see the world the same way that Mitt Romney said he did. So that's a little unusual, particularly in the Republican Party. And we also saw a tremendous, tremendous fallout on the Republican or conservative commentariat side. People like David Brooks, people like Bill Kristol saying it was arrogant and stupid, saying, of course, we still need to vote for Mitt Romney, but also just piling these opprobriums on him. It seemed like they were venting some sort of deeper frustration with the candidate.
I think there is a tremendous frustration, obviously, because for the beginning, the script was written this way for the Republican Party, that President Obama is vulnerable, that he's mishandled the economy, he's mishandled foreign affairs, and he's ripe for the taking. And, you know, as that famous Saturday Night Live comedy bit we saw years ago with John Lovitz portraying Michael Dukakis and said, I can't believe I'm losing to this guy. I mean, a lot of the Republicans feel the same way. They're saying, how can we be trailing when all the issues should be on our side?
Absolutely. Now, and some, we should say, some very well-recognized voices on the right have stuck by Mitt Romney, such as this one.
But man, some of these Republicans inside the Beltway just ripping Romney to shreds over this comment. You know, even if they think it, how is it useful to say it? And they're wrong anyway. But how is it useful to say it?
Okay, that, of course, was Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. No, that was our friend Rush. But another person who got on television this week to comment on what Mitt Romney had said was this fellow.
I don't know what he was referring to, but I can tell you this. When I won in 2008, 47% of the American people voted for John McCain. They didn't vote for me. And what I said on election night was, even though you didn't vote for me, I hear your voices, and I'm going to work as hard as I can to be your president.
And clearly Mitt Romney heard that message. I think this was an effective pushback on what Romney said, and I think Governor Romney also felt that one of the reasons he said really for the 100% of the country was because of criticisms like this.
Now, as another part of their response, the Romney campaign put out some tape from 1998 when then, I believe, State Senator Barack Obama made some remarks with favorable coloration for redistribution, income redistribution, and jumped on that. Now, of course, the full context of the statement that he made was was that that was part of what a healthy economy based on free enterprise would achieve and so on. So it's a little hard to call it a sharp sword, but it was at least a way for them to parry all of the swords that were coming at them.
But they're not parrying the constant release of polls that's showing Mitt Romney trailing the president and also showing him not in a good light. The Pew poll is a perfect example this week. The poll had President Obama leading 51-43, an 8-point lead. We've seen the Gallup poll had the president up by 1 point. Wall Street Journal had up by 5 points. But more instructive, I thought, in the Pew poll was the net unfavorable for Mitt Romney. No candidate in their surveys, I think going back to 1988, no candidate in the general election had a more of an unfavorable rating than a favorable one, and Mitt Romney does have that. And again,
so he's underwater in the favorability index.
But we saw that coming out of the convention, because while the Democrats loved Barack Obama, the Republicans didn't love Mitt Romney as much as they wanted to beat the president. And I think that lack of love that Mitt Romney is getting from his fellow Republicans, let alone fellow voters, is instructive.
The other polling result this week that is potentially meaningful is that there is a gap, fairly persistent and fairly consistent, across the battleground states. Now, North Carolina to one side, which looks to be leaning towards Mitt Romney. The other battleground states we've been looking at, Florida, New Hampshire, Virginia, a very important one, Ohio, perhaps the most critical of all, and then Michigan, Wisconsin,
Iowa, Colorado,
right. Nevada, all of them leaning at least a little bit towards the incumbent, and in a couple of cases, outside the margin of error. So that, in a sense, is even more discouraging than the overall national number, which, as you say, in most polls is still quite close.
Right. You make a very important point. The name of the game is 270 electoral votes, and the way to get it is in states like Virginia, Ohio, Florida, all states that went for President Obama 4 years ago, all states that Mitt Romney had hoped to and perhaps expected to pick up if he's going to be the next president. But Ohio, I've seen anywhere between 5 and 8 point Obama lead. Florida, it's about 5 points. Colorado's pretty close. But Wisconsin, there was a Marquette University Law School poll. Now, this seems to be an outlier.
This is clearly an outlier,
but
though.
But 14 because, points.
Yeah, no, but that no one thinks that that's the accurate margin there. And the people I've talked to in Wisconsin say that that's probably at least double what the real margin is. And they clearly got too many Democrats, and they conceded that their sample had clearly polled too many Democrats.
And perhaps a lot of these numbers are a reflection of the bounce, whatever that means. Right now, Mitt Romney's obviously trying to get back on track. Next week, Mitt Romney has a 3-day bus tour in Ohio. And basically, this is going to be all just window dressing until October 3rd, the first debate. And I think once that first debate is out of the way, we'll see where the polls are, and that would be very instructive.
Indeed, it will. There are 3 debates between the two principals. There's also a debate between Joe Biden, the vice president, and Paul Ryan, the man who wants his job. And there's also a debate, Ken Rudin, between Bill O'Reilly of Fox News and Jon Stewart of The Daily Show. Will that possibly draw a larger audience than the principals or the VPs?
Well, the event is in at George Washington University here in Washington. It's already sold out, and I think they were like $75 to $100 per ticket. I look, since most people get their news from either Fox or The Daily Show, perhaps that will be very instructive. But, you know, for $4.95, you can live stream it off the web.
I think a few people may do that.
I think so.
I think a few people may just do that. All right. One of the reasons we knew that poll in Wisconsin looked a little bogus on the number between Obama and Romney was that it had Tammy Baldwin, the Democratic nominee for Senate there, running 8 points ahead of many, many times elected Governor Tommy Thompson, the Republican nominee for the Senate there. Ken, nobody believes she's 8 points ahead.
No, and I don't think she is ahead, but I will tell you one thing, that Tommy Thompson has not been campaigning since he won the primary. He basically spent so much of his own money trying to ward off conservative opposition in the GOP primary that he has spent much of September trying to
raise money,
whereas Tammy Baldwin has tons of money. Now,
and she's been advertising pretty nonstop since the convention, whereas Thompson's not been on the air,
right,
as I
she
understand.
Had, right, that's absolutely true. She has not had any Democratic opposition in the primary, and she was a Democratic nominee from day one. Thompson will start his advertising campaign soon. I don't think for a second it's going to be too late. I don't think for a second that the Republican groups like American Crossroads won't be coming in with tons of money. And I still think, I mean, who knows, but I still think Tammy Baldwin is this sounds like a kind of language out of the 1970s, but too liberal to win statewide. She's very popular in Madison, but does that play in Green Bay and places like that? I don't think so. Tommy Thompson still has work to do. It's still very, very close. I think it's one of the few states, though, that the Republicans do pick up.
And the conservatives who were so angry about Tommy Thompson being nominated in the primary will come home and vote for him in November as they come out to vote for Romney, whether they really love him or not. And that state, I believe, will be close for both those two offices. Massachusetts, not close for president, but we have always assumed that a lot of people would split their ticket, vote for Barack Obama and for Scott Brown. Is that not going to be the case?
Well, who knows? And the reason I say who knows is because there have been two polls over the past week, including WBUR, that has Elizabeth Warren up for the first time in quite a long time.
By several points.
Several, 4, 5, 6 points, exactly. But there was also a poll Thursday morning by the University of Massachusetts at Lowell and the Boston Herald that had Scott Brown up by 6 points. So the point is, it is very, very close. But two things we can say with some certainty. Elizabeth Warren did come out of the Democratic convention with some momentum. She had a very effective speech at the convention, and a lot of the hand-wringing that Democrats have been saying about her campaign, that she's losing focus, she's really gone on the attack lately against Scott Brown. And look, the Democrats want to see a fighter, and of course they want to get Ted Kennedy's Senate seat back, so they will rally around Warren. But I should say, though, that independents are still backing Scott Brown by a sizable margin.
And most of the votes that are cast in Massachusetts are ultimately cast by independents, are they not?
Yeah, absolutely true. But again, if your presidential candidate is 33 points down, it's going to be obviously a tough obstacle for Scott Brown. It's very, very close.
All right. And something of the same dynamic in terms of a close race and in terms of the presumed presidential result obtains in the state of Connecticut, where Linda McMahon is running again, as she did 2 years ago.
Yeah, I don't understand how this has happened, because after she spent $50 million of her own money 2 years ago when she lost to Richard Blumenthal, her negatives were pretty high.
Pretty high.
Yeah, but now somehow she's more cuddly. She's more of a grandmother.
Better ads.
Obviously, but it's hard to get a second first look at somebody. And, you know, the first look of Linda McMahon was not positive. She's certainly, it's more positive this time, and Chris Murphy has some kind of personal things
about...
That's
the Democratic nominee.
Congressman.
A member of Congress.
Right, who has never run statewide before, unlike Richard Blumenthal.
Member of Congress.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That could be... I still think Murphy wins. I still think the Democrats hold the seat. The last Republican, of course, to win a Senate seat in Connecticut was...
Democrat in Connecticut.
Republican.
Republican in Connecticut... Lowell Weicker.
Of course. And that was 1982, so it's been a long time since it was a Republican victory. I don't see it happening, but the Democrats are spending more money there than they expected to.
All right, and Virginia, the Democrats, maybe a tiny little lead in that neck-and-neck race there between former Governor Tim Kaine and former Senator George Allen.
And former Governor George Allen as well. For the longest time, we kept saying that this was a dead-even race, both in the presidential contest and in the Senate race. But the Democrats seem to be on the ascendancy in both the presidential and the Senate contest. Both the New York Times and the Washington Post polls have Tim Kaine up maybe 4, 5, 6 points. And again, the fact is, this had been a dead-even race for the longest time, and I don't know what kind of momentum we're seeing, but this is certainly good news for the Democrats.
Okay, they're having their innings in a couple of these states, and we'll see what happens in the bottom half of the inning. But two states the Republicans had pretty much counted on picking up Senate seats in. Indiana, where Dick Lugar lost his primary, but the Republicans still seem to be in pretty good shape with Richard Murdoch as their nominee. And in Missouri, where they at one time assumed that any of their candidates would beat Claire McCaskill, the incumbent Democratic senator, with a lot of problems.
And both states are showing troubling signs for the Republicans. Richard Murdoch is not running away with the race. Joe Donnelly, the Democratic congressman, is a moderate conservative in some areas.
Very telegenic candidate.
Yeah, and he's running a much better campaign than Murdoch. The Republicans are nervous about it. They're pumping a lot of money in the state, but an upset could not be ruled out.
Missouri is a little tougher call, and I believe that Newt Gingrich is going in to help Todd Akin, the Republican embattled nominee.
Newt Gingrich said, look, Todd Akin was the chosen candidate of the Republican primary electorate. He should stay on the ballot. And of course, nobody thinks anymore that Todd Akin is going to get off the ballot. But polls are showing with a slight Claire McCaskill lead, but she's outspending him, Akin 10-1. And we know that after the deadline to get off the ballot comes and goes, September 25th, she's going to be spending a ton of money reminding women in Missouri about his comments about rape and pregnancy.
Just in case we didn't have enough excitement in 2012, we have an exciting announcement to make about the Senate races of 2012. 14.
Which candidate?
We would be talking about the...
Which candidate?
We would be talking about
which
the...
Which candidate?
The candidate in Delaware. Ken, and you know she is not a candidate. A witch.
Oh, the witch candidate, of course.
Christine O'Donnell.
Right. 2 years ago, she was the Republican nominee, knocked off the establishment, ran a pretty much inept campaign. Republicans were hoping it would be apt, but this was inept.
And she had a lot of Tea Party money, but it wasn't enough to beat the Democratic nominee, Chris Coons, who was a bit of a coat holder. Nobody really expected this to be a tough race, a good race. Mike Castle, the Republican establishment candidate, was supposed to walk away with it. Then he loses to Christine O'Donnell and the Tea Party in the primary.
Well, she says she's ready to come back and run again in 2014.
And, of course, that is wonderful news for the Republicans in Delaware.
Well, speaking of not good news for the Republicans, I don't want to harken back to the Republican...
Well, we never go back.
No. I don't want to harken back to Iowa because that would be Tom Harkin. But I don't want to harken back to the Republican convention because, as if Mitt Romney didn't have a really bad week, Clint Eastwood had something to say about his appearance at the Republican convention.
If somebody's dumb enough to ask me to go to a political convention and say something, either they're going to have to take what they get.
You know, that's just what I said about us.
And that's it for Ken and Ron.
Yeah, that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And join us again next week, won't you, for It's All Politics from NPR. Dun, dun, dun.